Hello and welcome to the opening bell. My name is Matt Christie, joined again by John Dennan.
Hello.
How you doing, John? You all right?
Good. Pretty good. Can't complain.
First of all, can I apologise to people that were looking last week for the podcast and it was not there, I don't think, until the Monday. We did record it before the weekend, and we did attempt to break down some of the fights that were occurring last weekend. However, there was a technical hitch with our podcast provider. But you can go back and listen to last week's if you wanted to. And if you did go back and listen, you'd have heard John make a rather audacious prediction that Carson Jones might score a spectacular knockout.
Yeah, I'm going to spin it as a prediction, even though I really just flagged it up as a possibility.
Well, the evidence is certainly there online, so do go and have a listen to that if you're so inclined. If not, let's talk. Just carry on listening to us for the time being on this one.
Jeez.
So Brian Rose, he'd said a lot beforehand. I'm done with domestic level. I just want another title shot. And he came unstuck. Some thought very unfairly. They thought that Ian John Lewis stepped in too soon. And, you know, their thought was that it was only the first round. Wasn't a great deal of time left in that first round. And Brian Rose perhaps deserved the chance to continue against Carson Jones. First of all, John, what was your take on events?
I thought the stoppage was all right. I thought Brian Rose was hurt. His legs looked like they were gone. So, you know, I only watched it back on as sort of as the replay. But on the replay, I thought he looked vulnerable. I thought he was open to taking another hard shot. And I thought the referee stepped in to save him from that. So that was my take on it. But the sort of the wider world seems outraged at the stoppage. I actually thought it was a good one.
I must admit,
I sympathise
with Brian Rose initially, and then you watch it again, and I've watched it three or four times since, and the more you watch it, the more I'm convinced that the stoppage was spot on. I think there was something like 15 or 16 unanswered punches, although Rose had kind of been in command early on in the round.
He wasn't
punching back at that point, nor was he blocking anything that was coming his way. It's not to say that he wouldn't have survived, but you can certainly justify the stoppage. How much of the controversy and the anger do you think was directed towards Ian John Lewis because of the controversies that Ian John Lewis has been involved in recently or over the last few years? Not the most popular referees.
Yeah, I think there's that sort of background to it, and he has had some certainly debatable calls before, so I think that all fed into sort of, you know, people were worried about that and expecting a mistake and interpreted it that way. But isolated, I thought this one was all right. And why not let the controversy fuel a rematch? That's happened before. I'd rather everyone walks out of the ring safe and well, you know, and does it again. A loss doesn't have to be the end of the world, depending on how you lose.
It's not going to be as big as Froch Groves 2, though, is it?
You say that. It's going to be Blackpool's Froch Groves 2.
Mickey Van made a point this week in the way that sometimes the way Ian John Lewis stops fights, he almost gives the impression that he's second-guessing himself just before he does it. He seems to almost hesitate before he actually steps in, which kind of gives the impression that he's not 100% sure what he's doing. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, he had some jittery leg movements himself ahead of jumping in here. But maybe he was just getting himself in position and having a look. I've seen occasions where the referee, maybe even it was Ian John Lewis, sort of stepped in to break them up and then changed his mind and waved the boxer who was in the midst of finishing his opponent back in. You know, and that's bad. You know, it's better what we had with Rose, where at least he made his mind up, stepped in, and once he stepped in, he's got to end it.
Okay, where does Brian Rose go from here? Is there anywhere for him to go, do you think?
Carson Jones 2 at Wembley.
At Wembley, yeah, why not? Yeah.
But yeah, I do. You know.
Would you pick him to win a rematch?
No.
No, you wouldn't.
I think Jones had hurt him, and I think as great as, like, Jones looked very good at long range, didn't he? Like, we already knew his jab was very good. But when Jones sort of got in close, and he got in closer and hurt him with those big shots, I think, like, you know, you can just see over the course of 12 rounds, eventually Jones getting in there. That's not, you know, I'm not. That's not a confident prediction or anything, but that's just a hunch. I think going into a rematch, Carson Jones would have the momentum in a way that Rose doesn't.
Brian Rose was talking about hoping to secure a world title shot on the back of beating Carson Jones. Has Carson Jones now got a case for getting a title shot himself, given the quick and unexpected nature of his victory?
Mate,
go on, be honest, mate, John.
Huh?
Be honest.
It's not, anything can happen though. I don't really see him in the role as world championship contender. I do see him more as a gatekeeper type. I'm not quite sure how this is going to propel him to a world title fight.
Given the current climate out there, that you could feasibly see, I mean, if he went in with Rose again, and he was to win again convincingly, say no controversy whatsoever, say stop him in 5 rounds, for example, you could see him in a world title shot against somebody like Cornelius Bundridge or something like that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
He's, you know, now and again these fighters come along and you just sense that perhaps, because Carson Jones has gone about, he's never done anything the easy way particularly.
No.
And sometimes you do like to see these guys, not at the expense of more, but if the opportunity arises, you do like to see these guys kind of get in there and get a title shot and get a payday and kind of get, sometimes these fighters, Carson Jones is starting to look like that. You know?
Exactly, he wouldn't be undeserving of a big fight, would he? But I suppose he'd need the backing that sort of, had the juice to get him in the right place.
That Brian Rose has got, for example. Okay, let's move on to Stephen Ormond and Terry Flanagan, which was in the wondrous city of Wolverhampton.
I hear good things.
It's a beautiful place. Now, again, not controversy perhaps, but Stephen Ormond certainly deserved to be disqualified, was my take on it. What about you?
Yeah, it was a pretty blatant headbutt, wasn't it?
He'd
had plenty of warning, so he sort of had to go. Odd choice to use the head as a third hand in that particular scenario.
It was almost not like he, I suppose he was kind of looking for a way out almost, but it was curious because he wasn't, although he was certainly,
I thought he was lagging behind, but not out of the fight.
Yeah, he wasn't out of the fight, yeah.
Yeah,
it seemed like a kind of a curious, sudden turn of events, didn't it?
Yeah, but maybe it was frustration. Maybe, you know, Flanagan was holding him a bit, stopping him from working, or holding him quite a lot. But still, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a stroke of genius.
Okay, let's talk about, very briefly, Terry Turbo Flanagan. Where can he zoom off to now? Does he deserve a world title shot?
You know, you could see him, you know, maybe, you know, on paper, a fight or two more, you know, against a sort of, some sort of gatekeeper or against some higher level opponents would make you feel he deserved that shot more. But I think in reality, this has propelled him up the WBO's rankings. And especially if Terence Crawford, as expected, moves up in weight. Though actually we've been expecting him to move up for quite a while and hasn't materialised. Then you can see an opening for him there. And I think if he gets the opportunity, he's got to take it.
Okay, so speaking of opportunities, two massive opportunities for British fighters this weekend. Martin Murray will start with over in Monte Carlo. Our man Paul Wheeler is out there as we speak. We believe he's landed safely. Had a few issues trying to get into his hotel.
Hasn't made it anywhere to stay.
But he's over there. He'll be ringside for us. All being well, should Wi-Fi hold up, he'll be providing a live blog of events from ringside. Martin Murray, Gennady Golovkin, it's a massive, massive, massive ask for Martin Murray, isn't it, against Gennady Golovkin, arguably the most fearsome world champion out there at the moment, certainly perhaps with the biggest reputation as to regards his punching power and his killer instinct and everything else. What chance do you give Martin Murray of bringing back the gold?
He is a big underdog, but, you know, Golovkin's a terrifying prospect for anyone. So if you're going to put anyone in with Golovkin and hope to see a decent fight, why not Martin Murray? I think he's big for the weight. I think he's pretty solid defensively. And he's shown, you know, and he was, you know, arguably unfortunate against Felix Sturm in Germany, though I didn't think a draw was the worst scoring mm-hmm. in the world. And also unfortunate against Sergio Martinez, you know, who was, you know, near the top of his game when he fought him in Argentina. So he deserves this fight, but it is sort of a slightly mixed blessing when you've got to go in with someone like Golovkin.
We can draw parallels from Matthew Macklin's kind of world title adventures, obviously, in that he went in with Sturm. It was very unlucky not to get the verdict there. Gave a good effort against Martinez, dropped yeah. him. Perhaps nothing quite as impressive as what Martin Murray did, but ultimately he was certainly in the fight. He gave Martinez a very, very good scrap.
Yeah.
And then he went up against Gennady Golovkin and it was a whole different ball game. He was dominated and stopped rather violently in three rounds. Do we expect Martin Murray to fare better against Golovkin, or do we expect Golovkin to make similar quick work of Martin Murray that he did to Matthew Macklin?
I expect Murray to do better. I think there were all sorts of problems in Macklin's training camp for that fight. And he'd also been fair, you know, he couldn't miss that fight because he had been quite inactive for a while, as I remember. There were all sorts of things going wrong in the build-up to it, and then, you know, it doesn't take much for everything to fall apart when you've got Golovkin coming at you. Murray seems like a durable type. He's gone off and secluded himself in South Africa, so I think, you know, I think, yeah, and he's been with Oliver Harrison, what, most of his professional career, his whole professional career. Mm. So they've certainly got a good relationship and a good understanding. They'll have a plan. So I think he could actually give Golovkin some problems.
What would that plan be? What do you think what is the key to beating Golovkin?
Well, I don't want to give any spoilers for what's in the magazine this week. Also, I have no idea. Because that's the problem. I think if you're too aggressive, I think you've got to be defensive, because otherwise Golovkin can hurt you. So, I think Murray's going to have to focus on his defence, where you could see him sort of thwarting Golovkin's attempts to get to him too quickly, but that would also be giving away rounds. So I could even see him, you know, losing on points. The first guy to lose on points for what, 8 years, 7 years, or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's what we're asking in this week's magazine. How do you solve a problem like Golovkin, you know, who can knock you out whilst you're in the middle of hitting him in the face, as Daniel Gill found out, who seems technically superb and also has that power. And the interesting thing about the Macklin fight was the way Golovkin can sort of put pressure on you without throwing a punch, just in the way he's moving, which is sort of interesting that these well-schooled top amateurs, you know, like Lomachenko has a knack of, he won't do it, he won't throw any punches for most of the first round, but he's moving around you, figuring out what he's going to do and how he's going to get you. But, you know, Golovkin's even more threatening than that, because he's sort of going forward and putting pressure on you and moving you around the ring without throwing punches.
Yeah.
So I don't know what you do.
I don't think it's any exaggeration to say it would perhaps be the biggest upset of the last few years if Murray was to come away with a victory, given Golovkin's reputation. Let's look at a few upsets in history, and there's generally a reason for them. Okay, so let's look at a famous one, which is often quoted when an English fighter goes off to attempt to win a world title against a highly reputable champion, and that's Donald Curry against Lloyd Hunnigan. Famously, Donald Curry, although I mean, we might be doing Hunnigan a bit of a disservice, but it's no secret that Donald Curry was heavily weight drained going into that fight. That's not going to be a factor here, is it?
I wouldn't expect so.
I mean, we've already had the weigh-in as well. Golovkin comfortably under the weight. It's said numerous times that he can make like middleweight.
Yeah.
So that's not going in Murray's favour. Bad preparation from Golovkin, like Mike Tyson against Buster Douglas. Do we expect Golovkin to have been badly prepared, to have not trained as diligently as he has in the past? Is that a possibility? Is that something that perhaps Martin Murray might have going for him?
Seems unlikely. Obviously, he has had sort of Golovkin has had tragedies in his personal life, which interestingly, just you know, when we had that big feature in the magazine, that was a no-go area for Don McCrory's interview. Do I see it taking his eye? I don't see it. I don't see him being distracted and taking his eye off the ball, though.
Often, even though they may not underprepare, victims of an upset can perhaps underestimate their challenges slightly. Mentally, they can perhaps underestimate them, even though they've done everything physically right. Mentally, they may already think the fight is won. Things that come to mind is Tyson against Holyfield, perhaps even Julio Cesar Chavez when he lost for the first time against Frankie Randall. Is there any danger at all that Gennady Golovkin has underestimated what Martin Murray will bring?
Possibly. I think, you know, he could be taking Murray lightly. He could be seeing this, you know, they're talking about the fights he wants later in the year. He could be seeing this sort of, you know, not particularly well-known English guy having some good credentials, but it's a warm-up fight for the bigger fish he wants to fry later in the year. And that would be, his, you know, a potential downfall, because I don't think you should take Martin Murray lightly. I think you should view him as a sort of a serious contender. It's just the problem for Murray is Golovkin's an exceptional champion.
Yeah, it's true. And Golovkin has said that he expects Martin Murray to be his toughest challenger, but he has said he is always very, very polite, and he said similar things about, I think, pretty much all of his challengers so far. So perhaps we shouldn't read too much into that. And something else that can happen is that the challenger will be an absolute revelation, like Sonny Liston, Cassius Clay, like George Foreman, Joe Frazier. Can we rule that one out as well? Because we've already seen, perhaps, the best of Martin Murray against Sergio Martinez, against Felix Sturm. Or is there another level that Martin Murray can go to against Gennady Golovkin?
There is potentially another level. You know, it's a hard one until we see him in action. You know, this training camp could have been different to the others we've seen before, even though he's away, he's not on home soil. It's not, you know, he was in Felix Sturm's backyard, he was in Martinez's backyard. You know, Monaco's not a million, you know, it's probably closer to England than Kazakhstan, than it is to Kazakhstan. So, you know, he'll need to be inspired, but he could be. So I think, maybe, I'm optimistic. I think, obviously Golovkin's the favourite, obviously he's expected to win. But I think Murray's got the potential to maybe put a bit of a dent in his aura and, you know, make a fight out of it. I think it's going to be good. I say watch it.
And that leads us nicely onto the next subject. So obviously, the fact it's on terrestrial television, it's on Channel 5. I believe the biggest numbers that Channel 5 have done in recent years was Tyson Fury, Derek Chisora, the first fight, which I think was around 3 million. Which is good numbers. Do we expect Gennady Golovkin and Martin Murray to draw in more than 3 million?
You could say it merits it, because Golovkin is, what, one of the top, one of the, you know, pound for pound, one of the top boxers in the world right now, and it's a British guy challenging him. That's a great fight to have on terrestrial TV. I think, you know, Golovkin's not particularly well, you know, not known outside of sort of heart, you know, serious boxing fans in these parts, whereas Fury and Chisora were both sort of big personalities that people had heard of and would tune into. So hopefully it does the same kind of numbers, though I suspect Fury being a British heavyweight and a character, you know, has more of appeal to a casual British television audience in the UK.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. I mean, there's a lot obviously been made within the boxing industry about Gennady Golovkin, how exciting he is, and this, that, and the other. And there's been comparisons made to Mike Tyson in his heyday and the way that he's walking through his opponents. But like you just said, when Mike Tyson was at the top of his game, every man in the street, and man and woman and kid and everyone had heard of Mike Tyson and knew what he was about. You go outside now and you ask people who Gennady Golovkin is, and I'd be astonished if, you know, 1 out of 10 would be able to give you an answer.
Yeah.
So I think that may affect the viewing figures somewhat. Also, there's some boxing on another channel, isn't there? Which may affect viewing figures.
Yes.
Paul Smith gets a rematch against Arthur Abraham, the first fight. Smith performed, I think it's fair to say, a lot better than probably anybody outside of the Smith camp expected. He certainly ran Arthur Abraham close, far closer than the scorecard suggested. I would suggest that if the scorecards had favoured Abraham, but they'd been more representative of the action that had preceded them, we wouldn't be seeing this rematch.
Yeah.
What does Paul Smith have to do to win the WBO super middleweight title? It wouldn't, if he was to do it, it would be nothing like the upset that if Martin Murray was to win, would he?
No, I think he's got a chance.
I think he's got a chance. What has he got to do? Does he have to do anything differently? Because almost,
I think you've got to say more of the same, you know, as in he's got to be a bit stronger and more physical to deal with Abraham's strength. But I think it's a case of you know, more of the same, but more
of it.
Yeah.
I mean, Smith is what, 30?
He's 32.
32.
He's the same age as Mitty.
Is he?
Yeah.
Okay. So he's 32.
And I haven't won anything.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have.
I've won hearts and minds.
Minds.
I haven't won any concrete titles, though.
If Abraham, I don't think you could deny that Abraham has been on a downward spiral probably since he left the middleweight division.
Yeah.
Or the super middleweight certainly wasn't as good a fit for him as middleweight proved to be, where he was. And it's easy to forget that now. He was a dominant champion, IBF champion. Not quite as fearsome as Golovkin has been, but you know, I think he was around longer. He made more defences. He was impressive at that point, Arthur Abraham. He moved up in weight. People were expecting more of the same, and he then was exposed to an extent against Andre Durrell. He was widely outscored by Carl Froch and Andre Ward. Is he tumbling enough from that initial pedestal that Paul Smith could be going up and he can overtake him?
Yeah, I think Abraham is going backwards, and someone sooner rather than later, you know, he's there to be beaten. I think Paul Smith showed more than was expected in their first fight, and if he can sustain that, and if Abraham continues to decline, he can potentially overtake him. So I wouldn't. You've got to see Abraham at home as the favourite. It's going to be, you know, he's a tough dude as well. It's going to be hard to knock him out.
I think he's only lost once at home as well.
Yeah, but if I felt like, you know, betting your house on something crazy this weekend, I would bet on a Paul Smith win.
Points?
Yeah. Because you never know, you know, obviously there's been a lot spoken about the judging beforehand. You know, that focus on them may make sure it's a fair decision. And they also might,
Smith.
Yeah, they might swing back the other way if they don't want to be perceived as favouring the home guy. I think all, you know, all we want is it to be a fair decision that's sort of reflective of the action.
How much do we read into the fact that this rematch wasn't mandated, it wasn't ordered by the WBO? Arthur Abraham didn't have to do this. He's obviously, or it would seem, he's being led towards a super fight with Felix Sturm, which it would be a super fight up there. It seems that Arthur Abraham, is there a sense that Arthur Abraham has seen and felt the best of Paul Smith and feels there's absolutely no way he's going to lose this fight?
I think he probably wants to fight someone like Paul Smith, someone that he's confident of beating, because, you know, he's not going to want to fight anyone more demanding, because he's going to, you know, cash out with a big fight later on this year. But there's sort of interest in the Paul Smith fight because of what happened before. You have a feeling that this time around maybe they're taking Smith more seriously. Like, they Team Smith had to change hotel rooms because they'd been put up in a bad room with loads of noise or something like that. So I think there's a sign that, you know, those little tricks like that where the home guys are trying to get every advantage that they can is, you know, a backhanded compliment of sorts, showing they're trying to get every little advantage that they can find. I would think Abraham's confident of winning, but they probably know now after the first fight that it's not going to be easy. It's another good fight to watch this weekend.
So your prediction, let's get your predictions for, sorry, so what was Murray Golovkin?
I'm going to go out of limb and say Golovkin wins on points.
Okay, and
after a sterling, brave effort by Martin Murray.
That's not a wild prediction. There is a train of thought out there that Murray will be the first to extend him. And Paul Smith, Arthur Abraham?
He's going to do him.
What,
Smigger, on points.
Wow. Okay, so...
But that's a podcast prediction. If I was writing like a preview, I think you'd have to acknowledge that, you know, Abraham repeating a points victory at home is the more likely outcome. But in terms of a cheeky fiver,
well, a cheeky fiver. Well, if we've got a cheeky fiver, let's do the accumulator, shall we?
Let's do it, yo.
Let's do. So we'll have fiver on both Murray to last the distance, but lose.
Yeah.
And Smith Abraham to also go 12. But Smith to triumph.
Yes. And then
you'll be raking in the cash.
David Price and Josh Warrington to win by knockout. They're on the Smith Abraham undercards.
They are, yeah. What about
good weekend for Brits Abroad?
Lee Haskins, Huey Fury. They're out there in Monte Carlo.
This is precious, this cheeky fiver. Let's not go crazy. Just take the safe money.
Yeah, let's not be reckless with it. Okay, so let's move on. A Lee Purdy this week, or Lee Purdy kind of has announced that's it.
Yeah.
It's the end. He cannot, as much as he would like to, he cannot continue.
Well, he's had a detached retina. He's had several operations on his eye. You know, maybe another one, but none of the ones he's had so far has sort of restored the sight in it. So, sadly. Lee Purdy will box no more.
He always gave 100% Lee Purdy, didn't he?
Yeah.
Were you ringside for any of Lee Purdy's fights?
I was ringside for his last one against Bundu.
That was a good fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
It was one of those violent and entertaining one-sided fights almost. Even though Purdy was kind of always in it, there was never really any doubt that Bundu was going to win after a few rounds, was there?
Yeah, and I think that was also the problem, in that Purdy was brave, tough, always in it, but Bundu was hitting him with a lot of punches, but wasn't hitting hard enough to sort of stop Purdy coming forward onto those shots. So it was one of those sort of nasty fights that you could have done with it ending earlier, but there wasn't like a a moment into, you know, there wasn't a moment sort of quite, you know, until late on that would have prompted a referee or a corner to stop him, even though with hindsight it was, you know, it was probably a bit too tough.
I remember
hindsight, you know, everyone's a genius in hindsight.
Of course they are. I remember seeing, I was there when he, another loss, I'm afraid, when he lost to Colin Lyons. And again, I felt that Colin Lyons had won it fairly comfortably, but it was another one of those fights you couldn't take your eye off, and perhaps Purdy a bit too brave for his own good, really, again in that fight. But that was certainly domestically, that was a big upset that Colin Lyons, I think he won the British welterweight title that night, and that was in York Hall. But Purdy, I mean, he can look back on his career with pride and no regrets, can't he?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, he sort of overachieved what you'd have expected. He sort of made himself, you know, a British champion, and you know, he got an unlikely shot at a world title.
Yeah, absolutely. We will. Everyone at Boxing News wishes Lee Purdy all the best, the gentleman, and one of our favourite fighters of recent years. We have got one other subject to discuss, which I'm almost loath to do so. But before we move on,
to the
inevitable
Lee Selby Evgeny Gradovich fight.
Yeah, before we move on to the inevitable, we'll talk about Lee Selby.
He's fighting Evgeny Gradovich.
Good chance of victory, hasn't he? Home advantage of sorts.
Yeah, bringing it to Britain is probably pretty helpful in a sort of close world title fight like this. I'm not sure Selby actually rates Gradovich too highly. You know, you might think Brunker, who he beat, you know, to get this shot, is better than Gradovich. I don't know. I think it's pretty tough, but
Selby. I remember when, I think I was, well, I know I was there when he beat, he was an underdog when he beat Stephen Smith.
Yeah.
It was an incredible knockout, and it was a real kind of coming out performance. Few whispers that Selby might do it, but the overall impression beforehand was that Smith would be too strong for him. And I remember speaking to Joe Gallagher, Stephen Smith's trainer, afterwards, and although he didn't say I knew Selby would win, it was almost as if he slightly expected it. He knew exactly how good Lee Selby was. That's not a secret anymore, how good Lee Selby is. He's certainly world class, and he's proved that, hasn't he? Can he go to the next level? Of course, there's world class and then there's world championship class. Can he become a world champion?
He can do, and I tend to think home advantage might actually be key for this fight. But you know, when he sort of broke through and made his name with, you know, victories like beating Stephen Smith and looking great against Lindsay in Northern Ireland, and John Simpson, he then had a few fights where he sort of wasn't in that great form. Mm-hmm. They turned into war. You expected him to look good, and instead he had sort of 12 round battles on his hands. So, one of those against someone like Gradovich, and he won't win. But you'd favour him to win this, so he could get himself, he could become a world champion, but, you know, he'd be a featherweight world champion in a division potentially ruled by Vasyl Lomachenko. But Selby Lomachenko, if he wins.
Yeah, good fight, interesting fight. Big ask for Lee Selby. Speaking of Lee Selby, there's a really interesting and well-written feature in this week's Boxing News. Well worth a read, all about, you know, what Lee Selby used to get up to, turn his life around, and it really is a good read. Also, Bob Mee takes a look at some weird and wonderful fight locations over the years, and if you're a sports fan, and you know, there's some absolute, I mean, I consider myself, well, I do read boxing history frequently and have done for many years, but there's some facts.
You are paid to do it, Matt.
There are. I was doing it for more years unpaid than I have been paid, that's for sure. But yeah, Bob Mee here uncovers some loads of nuggets of information. Many of them I was completely unaware of. It's really, really, really good read.
But before we go, and we have been yattering for 35 minutes, so maybe we'll take the final five. And we'll talk about what we've probably been talking about. There's probably been one, I think we've now, this is about podcast number 90, perhaps. We're around the 90 mark.
And
I would say for at least half, the prospect of Manny Pacquiao fighting Floyd Mayweather has been mentioned. For some, it might have taken up a fair chunk of the podcast. For some, it may have just been briefly referenced. It's at the moment, as we speak, it's looking more likely than it has done at any point in history.
Yes.
Some well-respected names, some within boxing journalism are almost certain that it's going to be announced imminently. It is, we're led to believe, a case of all contracts have signed, all negotiations are complete.
That's what we're led to believe.
And we're just waiting on Floyd Mayweather to choose one of his social media platforms and let us know that it's going to happen. It's not until Mayweather tweets it. Do you? It's still. There's still an element of doubt there, isn't there? Until we hear that, yes, it's going to happen.
Yeah, because no one's sort of. The buzz around is that it's been agreed, but we haven't had any sort of, anyone concrete coming out and saying anything on the record. So until it's on. You just don't know. It's been such a torturous and taken so long to get to this fight. You can't really be confident, even now, when it's being dangled tantalizingly in front of us, that it's on. But it is building up such momentum that for anyone to back off from doing it would be highly embarrassing.
Well, exactly. I think it would be. I think the general perception is now is that if it was not to happen, it would be down to Floyd Mayweather. But I think if it was known to be the fault of either fighter, yeah, that fighter in question would really struggle.
Yeah, I mean that's the perception that's been created, but Mayweather is is that necessarily going to? He's not going to be strong-armed into doing anything. He calls shots.
No, but I do think it would greatly affect. There was a sense almost in the rematch in the Marcus Maidana fight, which was not a rematch that the world wanted to see, and there was a sense there before that fight had taken place. It's not to say that the rematch wasn't. I'm not saying it was a classic, but it was fairly entertaining. Mayweather took a heavy shot, I think, at the end of the third round. Looked a bit unsteady early on in the fourth. Other than that, completely in control, I thought. But there was a sense in the build-up to that, and most certainly in the press conference afterwards, that the public are starting to tire of Mayweather fighting somebody that isn't Manny Pacquiao, that isn't Gennady Golovkin, and that even isn't Amir Khan. So you do sense that maybe he's realised that. Maybe they have had a little look round at the likes of Keith Thurman and various other people and said to Showtime, well, how much money am I going to get for that? Well, what am I going to get for that? And really, Manny Pacquiao is the only one that ticks the boxes that Floyd Mayweather needs ticking at this point. I, last night, and I know you were as well, you and I have, we're the guys that are going to have to put it on the website. It's not helpful, is it, that it's just at Floyd Mayweather's mercy?
It's part of the drama.
Were you know? Like, I mean, you were...
Don't you like your strings being pulled all the way from Las Vegas by Floyd Mayweather and Al Heyman behind him?
I felt a little bit foolish last night just looking at Twitter feeds that were doing nothing at about midnight and eventually deciding to call it a day.
What I do...
Didn't really get a sleep. And then at 3 a.m, woke up almost in a cold sweat, like, oh, my God, maybe I've missed it. So then I'm immediately at 3 a.m... looking on my phone, see if there's been any kind of announcements because we need to get it on the website. How long are we going to have to do this for?
I find it's best if you just do what I do, which is download the Shots app and only follow Floyd Mayweather and just stare at it for hours on end. Occasionally a new image of his face will appear. Is that weird?
So
it is strange that they've got a sort of such a tight ship. As in, I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign that no word, I'm just, that you know, no, nothing's leaking out. Even Bob Arum, there's a press conference for Zhu Xiuming in the States last Tuesday. And even Bob Arum, who had been, you know, very vocal about it, I did an interview with him about it around the last Pacquiao fight. But by this press conference, he had gone from this sort of running commentary to not commenting on anything, which is probably a good sign that it's close.
There has been no word from. I mean, what are the chances that these rumours have just snowballed? Somebody's got hold of one rumour, they've believed it, so therefore they've kind of gone public with that rumour, saying, I believe this. Someone else has got hold of that, and that these rumours have snowballed, it's all got out of control, and the fight's nowhere near.
That is possible. You know, we are in a new social media age where, you know, rumours can travel very fast and build a momentum of their own. And, you know, people may think, you know, so you just don't know what's behind it all until they're in the ring. On May 2.
Well, that's it. You won't believe it, will you, completely until they are in the ring.
Is boxing doomed if Mayweather-Pacquiao doesn't happen?
No, of course it's not. Of course it's not. It's absolutely not. But
all
it
right.
doesn't.
I was just opening up a debate.
However, it does not paint boxing in a good light in the after all this amount of time. Had the negotiations not began, then that's fine. But the fact that we all now really, there's a big part of us that believes that perhaps, you know, this is the moment in time it's going to happen.
And it's a huge opportunity to take boxing from its niche to the mainstream. It's not, you know, because...
Of course it is.
That fight alone would get so much attention and, you know, it would probably draw attention to these premier boxing champion fights that Heyman Boxing is putting on the terrestrial channels in the States. It could potentially be a big shift, which would probably be a good thing.
It'd be a great thing. This is all, you can't read too much into what Floyd Mayweather is doing or he's not doing. He will be his own boss. He will do what he wants when he wants, for the most part. But I remember about this time last year, that for a while there was a bit of, is he going to fight Marcus Maidana? Is he going to fight Amir Khan? Then he made it quite public about, okay, I'm going to do this poll. Whoever wins this poll, I'm going to fight. Amir Khan won the poll. And ultimately he went out and fought Marcus Maidana, almost in a show of defiance and a middle finger up to everyone, I'm going to do what I want to do kind of move. But at least then we knew for definite that the wheels were in motion. And I remember doing a similar thing last year, but we knew for a fact that on a particular night, Floyd Mayweather would be announcing who his opponent was. There hasn't been any kind of announcement like that as yet.
No.
From Mayweather, has there? There's been nothing at all, in fact, from either fighter or either camp that has come out and said, yes, this fight is definitely happening. The only people that have come out and said, yes, this fight is definitely happening, are journalists.
Those guys.
Exactly.
But we do know he's fighting May 2, and that it'll be a Showtime pay-per-view.
No, that's true.
Those are facts that we have.
How much of a surprise would it be if, and I think that Amir Khan has more or less ruled himself out of the running.
Yeah.
The only other feasible guy to me that it would be, if it wasn't Pacquiao, would be Miguel Cotto.
Yeah.
How much of a shock would it be if we'd finished recording this, we went back to our computers, we checked the various social media feeds, and we found out that, yeah, hi guys, I'm challenging Miguel Cotto for the World Middleweight Championship on May 2nd.
It wouldn't be a shock. I think it would be more of a surprise than a few weeks ago, because when Cotto sort of let the opportunity to fight Canelo pass away from him, that's when you thought, okay, he must be eyeing a potential rematch with Mayweather. But all the sort of, you know, we know that Mayweather and Pacquiao are in negotiations. And so far we've had no news, really, of how far they progressed, but we've had no bad news, which, given how easy it would be for Mayweather Pacquiao to implode, is probably good news. So it wouldn't be a shock, but it would be more of a surprise, because it's certainly fair to say we're expecting Mayweather Pacquiao.
It's never, ever, ever. I mean, it was first mentioned in 2009, this fight, and it was seriously mentioned around that time in that people just kind of expected it to happen.
Yeah.
I think Boxing News, one of the first issues of 2010, I believe, had Mayweather and Pacquiao on the cover.
That's when we started, Matt.
That is when we started.
A long time ago.
But it was more or less a given, wasn't it, that it was going to happen. But negotiations had never quite got to this stage. At the same time, social media wasn't at this level, you know, either, was it? So, but although Dan Raphael and the likes of Steve Kim and people like that, they're all respected.
Yeah.
In the industry, but they have got things wrong before. But we should be encouraged, shouldn't we, that these guys seem as convinced as they can be that an announcement is about to take place.
Yeah, and guys who were sceptical a while ago, so they've been convinced it's more likely to happen. Lance Pugmire, a journalist based in Los Angeles, who's covered the story really well, certainly sounding optimistic that the wheels are in motion for what he's writing. So those sort of, you know, those are encouraging signs. But you know, who knows what's going to happen?
Okay, well, let's leave it at that, because, you know, who knows? By the time people are listening to this, this conversation might just absolutely.
Mayweather's going to be fighting Cotto. Pacquiao's going to be fighting Khan in a sort of monumental doubleheader that's going to build to Mayweather Pacquiao in September. I'd like that scenario. I'd take that.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't take that. I much prefer the Mayweather and Pacquiao are going to fight now, and then they're going to have a rematch in the autumn.
No, then they fight September, and the rematch is for 2016, when Mayweather's Showtime deal is
anyway
ended. He goes 50-0. It's amazing.
Anyway.
Not into that.
No, if it turns out in the next week that they don't, that it's not confirmed that they're not fighting, let's hope that this is the last time that we ever speak about this subject. But obviously,
seems unlikely.
But obviously, we hope that when we next speak to you, that there is good news to report on that score. We'll also be looking back, obviously, on Martin Murray's and Paul Smith's attempts to win world titles. And we'll be looking ahead to Carl Frampton, Tyson Fury, who will be in action the following weekend. In the meantime, please have a look at the magazine. There's some really good stuff in it, as always. And also, have a look on the website. We update it as often as we can. Should be a live blog, and hopefully two up actually this weekend. They're always worth a look. And as always, thank you so, so much for listening and for your continued support. And we will be back next week. And thank you, John.
Thank you, Matt, for all your efforts.